continued fighting limits processes of maintenance for the pipeline. As you can see, since the damage was inflicted on the pipeline in February, one of the reasons that is constantly being cited about why it's not the situation has not been rectified has to do with the access to the pipeline itself and the facilities. If maintenance is not conducted quickly, the oil gels in the pipeline, and then it makes it really difficult to get things flowing again. The other risk is the pipeline itself being caught up in the internal politics of the war between the RSF and the Sudanese armed forces. The RSF has so far said that it's not interested in deliberately damaging the oil facilities in Sudan because these are ostensibly a national resource. However, the fact that the flow of the oil tends to benefit one actor in the conflict, which is the SAF, the oil proceeds, the proceeds from the pipeline and all of that benefit the government, is going to be a concern to the RSF. The other risk coming from that conflict in Sudan, for South Sudan, is, you know, the long porous border basically means that the possibility of the entry of small arms, unregulated flow of small arms into South Sudan is increased exponentially as well. So all of that reduces their potential to monitor the border and will then enhance the flow of small arms into the country. That's another risk. The other risk is the risk we are seeing right now with regard to South Sudanese mercenaries participating in the war, and perhaps on both sides. But so far, we are only seeing that the RSF is the participation is predominantly on the RSF. I have tracked the patterns related to the South Sudanese mercenary participation in the conflict. And are using open source intelligence and mostly TikTok videos, social media videos, and stuff like that. And there are certain patterns that are emerging. One, we see that the recruitment is coercive, and that coercive recruitment has focused on recruiting South Sudanese that are resident in territories controlled by the RSF. Young South Sudanese men being forced to join the RSF. With promises of money, but that money has turned out not to have been paid to the South Sudanese mercenary fighters. The second recruitment, there seems to be like a pipeline of recruits coming from the northern regions of the country. Particularly, we've seen this. We've seen videos of fighters coming from all the way from northern Bahar Ghazal state, and also from Unity, and also from ABA. What then happens to these fighters who have acquired these weapons and experience? And the example of the Tuaregs who are fighting with Gaddafi in the Libyan civil war during the Arab Spring, going back to Mali and causing all that instability that Mali is now thrown into since 2013. So there's the long-term risk of fighters returning with their weapons, and they may pose a security threat to South Sudan. And so those are some risks that I see with this conflict.
You were talking about the internalization of the conflict, meaning spilling over into South Sudan. But what lessons could be learned from this Sudanese crisis in the backdrop of the effects crippling the whole economy of a country, What lessons could be learned by the authorities in South Sudan?
I think one of the lessons that can be learned from this episode in Sudan is the danger of having auxiliary militia forces recruited outside the premises of the law to serve the narrow whims of certain politicians. The RSF is basically a militia outfit that was recruited to do the dirty work of the Sudan armed forces. And the danger then is, how do you incorporate such forces that are acting outside the law into the armed forces of the country? Even though it was by parliamentary feat that the RSF was incorporated into the SAF in 2017, it actually really remained, this incorporation was nominal. To a large extent, the RSF was autonomous, an autonomous force. And so that's the lesson that we have to learn, our politicians in South Sudan have to learn. Recruiting auxiliary forces, militia forces, to support the armed forces in certain ways is going to have detrimental effects down the road when it comes to integrating these forces into the regular armed forces.
And looking at the mainstay of South Sudan, which is oil, and this oil, like you said before, is now in the center and front of this conflict. What would you advise authorities in South Sudan to do in future to avoid a situation where their crude is passing through a country that is instable?
I think the key lesson really is to diversify the revenue sources for the government of South Sudan. Their dependence, the sole dependence on oil is detrimental, is risky, and as we've seen now, you know, to get the oil out, it has to pass through another country, and where the situation is unstable in that country, that means then that you are at risk, and you're even at more risk when that oil is your sole revenue source. And for the lesson for South Sudanese politicians and for the country itself would be to diversify our revenue sources in South Sudan. Let's jerk up agricultural production and exports. And as you see right now, you know, the South Sudan pound is in a tailspin against the U.S. dollar, and that's because of the reliance on this sole revenue source.
When you talk about policy issues, I know that you are a senior policy advisor on Sudan and South Sudan. What would be one advice you would give to the two countries, or even to the belligerent forces in Sudan?
I think for South Sudan, politicians must take a neutral track in dealing with the sides in the Sudanese conflict, because their oil pipeline passes through that country, and in territory controlled by both belligerent parties in South Sudan. And therefore, it's really important for South Sudanese politicians to tread the neutral path and engage in dialogue with both sides in this conflict, and not appear to be supporting the other one side in the conflict, because that will jeopardize the oil pipeline completely. For Sudanese politicians, I think the war is not going to resolve anything. It's important to find a middle ground, to come to the negotiating table and discuss a peaceful track to resolving the conflict. Ultimately, for Sudan, really, like, the resolution of this conflict should culminate in the installation of a civilian democratic government. Anything short of that is going to cause further instability in the country.